Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. People who grew up or live on the border, any border, means they live between two cultures, between families, between languages. The Chicana scholar Gloria Anzaldúa called this place of in-betweenness Nepantla. Nepantla is a liminal zone, a passageway of sorts, where transformation occurs. Author and El Paso native Sergio Troncoso has edited a collection of essays, poems, and short stories from fellow Mexican-American Nepantleros and Nepantleras. It's called Nepantla Familias, an anthology of Mexican-American literature on families in between worlds. Writers like Sandra Cisneros, Reina Grande, and Irene Lara Silva contribute stories that explore the concept of Nepantla in familiar and unexpected ways. Troncoso says the concept of Nepantla exemplifies the Mexican-American experience.
This identity, the hybridity of the identity, belonging in two places, using two languages, going back and forth between Mexico and Texas or Nuevo Mexico, or, you know, wherever you're from. I think it's a really rich philosophical theme, Nepantla. It's an Aztec word. And so I don't know if you noticed in the title, it actually has the three languages, Nepantla, Nahuatl, Familias in Spanish, and then an anthology of Mexican-American literature, you know, of families in between worlds. So it really is encompassing three different existences, so to speak, that Mexican-Americans lived through.
Well, I have to tell you, it's a really beautiful cover. And looking at the book right now, it is the naked torso of a man facing away. It looks like he might have his arms crossed in front of him. You just see his back and his head bowed. But you also see a very prominent scar along his spine. Can you explain how this cover came about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm very proud of this cover because it's done by Antonio Castro, who is a fantastic graphic designer. I believe he's head of the graphic design program at UTEP, University of Texas, El Paso. And so I always love giving artists, especially local artists, a chance to do one of my covers. And he also did, for example, the cover of Nobody's Pilgrim. And so when I was creating this anthology and asking writers to write on this theme of Nepantla, I also contacted Antonio. And I said, well, I have this idea. And then eventually I had a manuscript with all the writers that I accepted into the anthology. And I sent it to Antonio at UTEP. And so he came up with this idea. And he said, first of all, a model that he had, this person with his back turned, it speaks to the imagery and to the content of the book in the sense of these are the burdens we carry. The scars that not only show pain and show what we had to survive as Mexican Americans on the border, but also what we overcame, the healing that happened when we found how we belong. And he also described the cover. It has on one side sort of a reddish wallpaper that he described as a more Mexican wallpaper. And then a bluish wallpaper right in the other side of the figure that he described more as an American wallpaper. So it's literally living in between two ideas, two cultures, and then the border being this scar right in his model that is on his back. And he said people sometimes think, and sometimes I got this when I was talking about the anthology when it came out, that people thought, oh, he was in some sort of fight or something, and it wasn't like that at all. It was actually a car accident that this model had been in which he had hurt his back. But that border, that scar right in the middle of the back of the model, is very emblematic of the content, you know, of what's in the book. And by the way, the book was just released in paperback by Texas A&M University Press this fall, and they say it's one of their best sellers.
Well, that's fantastic. And it's such a beautiful metaphor, what the cover is in relation to the book, now that you've explained it. And you yourself have also contributed to the book. Your entry is called Life as Crossing Borders. Can you explain a little bit to us about your contribution to the anthology?
I mean, I asked every single writer to write on this theme. And one of the things to keep in mind for your listeners is that I was very demanding as an editor, and it was for the benefit of the reader. I told these writers, and there are 26 writers who contributed 30 works, that I did not want their old work. I wanted new work, not available anywhere else, published for the first time in this anthology from these 26 writers. So almost every single essay, poem, or short story that appears in this anthology from people like Rene Grande and Sandra Cisneros and Jose Antonio Rodriguez and Rigoberto González, so many great writers in our community, is new work that appears for the very first time in this anthology that is not found anywhere else. And so what I wrote about, I wrote the intro and then I wrote an essay. People always ask me, well, you grew up in Isleta, right on the border on the outskirts of El Paso. My parents were Mexicano and we were very poor. We had an outhouse in the backyard and lamparas de petróleo, you know, kerosene lamps and stoves in Isleta. And then I ended up at Harvard and I went to Yale and now I teach at the Yale Writers Workshop. So the question I often get is, how did you go from point A to point B? And so that was my challenge, trying to write my essay, because people don't understand that any kind of success I've had as a writer, as an editor, as a thinker, really comes and begins with the Mexican immigrant values that I learned in Isleta from my parents. And so this is what I was trying to convey in the essay, how their work ethic, their focus on familia, their demanding nature about how I become a responsible person, even when nobody's looking, even when nobody, you know, is judging me, but that I have a certain integrity as a person and that they demanded that I acted this way, became the core of who I was. And so when I went to these very fancy places, you know, in the Northeast, I knew that the character that I grew up with, including my parents and my abuelita, Doña Dolores Rivero, who's very much of a muse in my work, they needed to be in literature. They needed to be in libraries. Other people needed to pay attention to these poor people on the border that have great values, great ideas about how to succeed in life, even when you're not given anything, even when in fact you're attacked or criticized or suffering under xenophobic attacks and stereotypes. So that was for me a way to, in this essay, to convey not only that my success that I've had very far away from the border really begins with the values I learned from my family, and then how I translated those values from, let's say, menial work, where I did a lot of construction with my father, to the kind of mental work, you know, that I did in the Ivy League and that I did at Yale and that I do now, you know, always working every day, trying to fashion a new story, a new essay, a new book. And so all of this, I hear my parents in my head. I hear my abuelita in my head. And so I've always made an effort to translate those values into the highfalutin world of the Ivy League. So I think those were some of the ideas that I was trying to grapple with in Life is Crossing Borders. And then how philosophical this concept is, to live on the border where your identity is not determined. You're not Mexicano. You're not an Americano. You're something in between. Identity is something to question, something to create, something to make an effort to pick and choose the best things from each part, from each culture, from each language, and to create something new. And then to give an integrity and a value to this creation, to this hybridity of living in between. Because, you know, you go to Mexico and they criticize you for, and I lived in Mexico for a year, oh, you're a pocho, you're an Americano. Or you go to the Ivy League and, oh, you're Mexican, you're not really an American. And so it doesn't really matter whether you go to the heart of Mexico or the heart of the United States. They think you're something where you don't belong. And what I am saying to people in this anthology and in my work is that this hybridity gives you power. It gives you power to question both sides. It gives you power to create something new. The foundational value of almost any immigrant, whether it's Mexican or Haitian or Jewish immigrant or Irish immigrant, that you have to create a new identity, a hybrid identity, when you come to this country.
Sergio Troncoso is the author of 9 books, including Nobody's Pilgrims and The Last Tortilla and Other Stories. He's the editor of the collection Nepantla Familias, an anthology of Mexican-American literature on families in between worlds. When we come back, living in between cultures on the border is one liminal space to navigate. The obstacles become more difficult with distance.
When you start going beyond the border, your heart is still in the border, even though you've gone way beyond it, and you don't know, well, do you belong?
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Stories inspired by the Ansalduan concept of Nepantla make up the collection Nepantla Familias, an anthology of Mexican-American literature on families in between worlds. Nepantla is the sense of in-betweenness experienced by people whose lives on the border are defined by being caught between cultures, landscapes, languages, and families. Writer Alex Espinosa writes in the collection about embracing toxic masculinity as a teen, struggling to come out as gay, and finding answers and refuge in books. Diana Lopez wrote a short story about a phlebotomist whose opportunity to advance her career hits an obstacle when her family tells her, "Why do you want to go back to school? She could just marry a doctor." Writer Reina Grande explores in the collection how her desire to fit in at school as an immigrant child ultimately led to the loss of her mother tongue, Spanish. Native El Pasoan and author Sergio Troncoso edited the collection of 30 essays, poems, and works of fiction. He says that the empowerment that sometimes comes with a life of hybridity and Nepantla also comes with a sense of guilt, separation, and loss.
It goes back to the scar on the cover. It not only shows the pain and the anguish, the hurt that you went through by crossing a border, but it also shows the healing on the other side. So I think Reina Grande's piece is an excellent piece about subtractive bilingualism, how when she came over, she lost her Spanish. And that is an incredible loss that she struggled to regain and to make better. But I think that happens when you cross a border. When you cross a border, there are some things you gain by, let's say, going to a new world and a new place, but also some things you lose. You know, you might lose your language. You might lose that connection to your parents, like Reina did. And then she has to struggle to regain a linguistic connection because she lost her Spanish and she struggles to regain it. And I think all of that is Nepantla. That it is not just beauty on the other side by crossing over to the United States. It's also the things you lose, the values you lose. Even in my case, but I think it's similar to what happened to Reina. When I was at Harvard and Yale, my parents did not know what I was doing. So I was very alone in terms of fighting these battles that I had to fight by myself in the Ivy League about how to write a research paper that is good enough for that place, how to keep myself from feeling completely beaten down by people who say in the Ivy League, "Oh, you speak with an accent, you don't belong here," or "Where are you from? You know, you're a raro, you're a stranger, an outsider." So you have to struggle against these losses that you do suffer when you cross a border. And I think Reina Grande and other people write about these other issues, you know, what you lose when you cross the border, as well as what you gain.
And there are some entries in this book that almost seem to have maybe Nepantla just on the surface. They're not quite as forthright as your entry as an essay by Reina Grande, for example. I'm thinking of Oscar Cáceres, his story, All the Pretty Ponies. It's about him right. as an eight-year-old getting his first job, putting little kids on ponies. And then he gets asked to ride a pony for the Charro Days Parade in Brownsville. And he falls off a horse. He's really embarrassed. And so the reader sometimes has to kind of reflect on, how do I see Nepantla in this story?
Well, for example, in Oscar Cáceres' story, it's about the values his father is conveying to him, which are not necessarily, let's say, the typical American values that you would see. You know, he falls off a horse as a boy during the middle of a parade, and some parents would run up and, you know, be helicopter parents and pick them up and, are you okay? And excuse the kid from what happened. His father was a Mexicano, you know, through and through, and pushed them to get up by himself to take care of the situation, even as a kid. And so I think that's where the Nepantla sense comes in my mind for Oscar Cáceres' story. He's not necessarily seeing in grade school in San Antonio and in Brownsville, where Oscar grew up, and in Texas. He actually has to react to the much more traditional values of his father that expects him to pick himself up, to take care of himself, and to fix the situation, because that's what a Mexicano would do. All of these essays and poems and stories are negotiations within familias of how they create themselves. And sometimes it's a very hybrid way. You pick some things that you liked from your parents. I certainly picked the work ethic, the personal responsibility that they demanded from me. And I think Oscar Cáceres' story is certainly about personal responsibility. You know, when a kid is demanded to be responsible for his own mistake and to fix it. But the things I did not choose from my parents are the machismo, misogyny that I would see in some parts of my community. And so you're doing this all the time, you know, within families. You're negotiating the identity. You're trying to pick what is right about what I'm learning from my parents, and then maybe what is not something I want to emulate or continue. That's the sense of Nepantla that I got from somebody like Oscar Cáceres' story.
And it's really interesting in reading all of these contributions to this anthology that, you know, the idea of toxic masculinity and of homophobia, right. They really do tend to surface quite frequently. And it's interesting to see that despite this really, really wide array of writers and poets and authors that have contributed to this, how very similar some of their basic experiences seem to be.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking of Alex Espinosa's story about the toxic masculinity yes. and homophobia that he faced, that he in part imbibed and started emulating until it caused him so much trouble and it led to alcoholism and all sorts of other issues that he had to overcome. And so you're trying to decide as a kid where you belong, how you belong, how you, on the one hand, love your parents and what they're doing, but on the other hand, you're not necessarily accepting everything that they do and how they do it. And so it's this crazy negotiation of trying to create this hybrid identity. I think Diana Lopez's story is another really good one. The protagonist in that short story is very ambitious for herself. She's a phlebotomist. She wants to improve herself and train herself to get a better job. And her Mexican parents are saying, well, that's good enough what you have. Don't be ambitious, you know, and why would a Chicana want to, you know, move up in the world? All you need is a husband, for example. And she, of course, you know, loves her parents, or the protagonist does, but she wants to be somebody better than what she started, and she wants to teach herself to get a better job. And so all of these sort of negotiations a lot of people go through and are very important for Nepantla. And the thing is, like, what happens within a family when you have an ambitious, intelligent, you know, young woman like Indiana's story that did not get that great support from her own family. You're either left to do it on your own and to fight these battles on your own and to educate yourself, or you're left in part to rechazar, to keep away or from some of your parents' values. While you might love their sense of family, their sense of closeness, you might not take to heart their lack of ambition or their questioning you because you're a woman who wants to have a great professional career, and that might mean educating yourself beyond what they understand. So I think all of these negotiations, whether it's about toxic masculinity or it's about giving opportunities for women or about homophobia, all of these things happen within families. I think that's why this anthology has really had such an effect on so many readers, because it causes these questions to come out and be discussed. And so many teachers have written to me, and I've done a lot of Zoom calls with a lot of students all across the country, in which this anthology brings up so much that is not being discussed in the classroom about how we negotiate identity and how we pick and choose and how we sometimes, to educate ourselves, sometimes you need to go it alone. But what is the cost of that? What is the price you pay to go beyond the border? And are you still Mexicano? You know, if you do go beyond your parents, but do you become something different? You become this Mexican-American, straddling many worlds, sometimes in the same day, by the way. This is what, for me, was always shocking that I experienced. You know, I would be talking to my abuelita on the phone in Spanish, who knew no English and grew up in El Segundo Barrio. And then I would turn around and had to attend a seminar on Aristotle or a discussion on history at Harvard. And then that weekend, I would be traveling to El Paso and talking to my parents. And so at every moment, you're switching languages, switching perspectives, switching, you know, ideas. And you have in your mind, you feel a little bit schizophrenic, but you have to keep your identity together. And that identity is going to be a hybrid identity that has a lot of combination and innovation, but also a lot of heartache and a lot of loss. And I think that that's inevitable for anyone who crosses the border.
And any of these writers who have contributed to this anthology, have you talked to anybody who really is truly comfortable in their own identity? Because I can imagine that a lot of people have that, you know, imposter syndrome, or they just don't know who they're going to be.
Yeah, well, it's true. I think all of these writers probably at one point or another, certainly I did, when you start going beyond the border, your heart is still in the border, even though you've gone way beyond it, and you don't know, well, do you belong? Should you be here? Did Harvard make a mistake? Or, you know, for Alex Espinosa, he'd been such a successful writer. Did New York publishers make a mistake taking him in? And of course they didn't. Part of the issue with this imposter syndrome is that many of the places we go to, we do belong there, but they're not made welcoming to Mexicans or Mexican-Americans. And so I think we need to take it beyond ourselves in our internal world and say, how do we make these places more welcoming or paying attention to the stories, the issues, the questions of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans so that that new generation coming to a place like Harvard or to a place like Yale or to a great New York publisher, did not feel like they have to do it all themselves. It's as much taking care of your own internal questions and self-doubts and not feeling you belong, but it's also, I think, an indictment of these places that need to change so that it does not become something new and something revolutionary to be a teacher at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, UCLA, or wherever, and you're a Mexicano, and you're proud of that Mexican heritage. So it's as much an indictment of these places that need to open up to our world and our complex world, not a simplistic, stereotypical world, but a complex world of what it means to be Mexican-American. I wonder if people, your listeners, travel beyond the border and how it makes them feel when they travel beyond the border. And by the way, I don't just mean traveling north. I also mean traveling south, because almost every of these questions of Nepantla, where you belong, how you struggle to become who you are, were as much prompted when I lived in Mexico City in Coyoacán as they were when I'd lived and studied at Harvard and at Yale. So I think one of the things I'm trying to do as a writer with this anthology is to tell people it's okay to be multiple people and to create something new in a hybrid identity and be proud of living on the border. Don't be harassed. Don't be pushed to one side or the other. To be so clear in your identity that you stop asking questions. Because in my mind, that's sort of an intellectual death that you have when you are not asking serious questions about where you belong and what you are doing. So for me, my identity is very strong because I've asked these questions, because I've lived on the border, and because of taking living on the border as something that is a positive, although it is a difficult positive to live in. And so I've made it a point to improve my Spanish, and I lived in Mexico and can write in Spanish and read in Spanish, and I do almost every week. And the same thing with English, you know, improving and making better your English so that it's of a literary quality that speaks to people. Don't be afraid of living in between, of living on this liminal space, because that's the richest space to live in, to really have to choose your identity piece by piece rather than to just assume it.
Sergio Troncoso is a native of El Paso and an author. He's the editor of the collection Nepantla Familias, an anthology of Mexican-American literature on families in between worlds. It was released in paperback in September. The collection has won awards from the Independent Publisher Book Awards, the International Latino Book Awards, and recognition for its cover artwork. Troncoso is a 2024 inductee into the Texas Literary Hall of Fame, a class that also includes the late columnist Molly Ivins and novelist Cormac McCarthy. Troncoso's literary papers are archived at the Whitliff Collections in San Marcos, Texas. Troncoso is also an educator, and he's provided TPR with a teacher's guide to Nepantla Familias. You'll find it at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Kekwa composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.